Howdy, and welcome to Books Unbound Podcast, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, me, it's Ariel, and...
me, Raylene.
Woo-hoo!
Exciting stuff!
Today, we're so excited to have a very special episode. Today, we're talking about On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong, our first ever book club pick. Woo. Oh. So, you know, this is a new podcast burgeoning onto the scene of podcasts, and we're testing ideas. We're trying out different episode concepts, different things that we can do, and, you know, we're talking about books, so we thought, let's do a book club. This would be a lot of fun. And we were thinking, what is a cool thing we could do with a podcast book club? So we asked for you guys to send us voice clips. And you did it. So today we're going to be sharing our thoughts and we're going to be listening to your thoughts. Yeah, we're very excited because, I mean, I'm really hyped because I think this is going to be a fun thing to do and we'll like learn about how to do this kind of episode and then we can do more in the future.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear people's thoughts.
That too,
it's
yeah.
Usually just you and me and this is going to be so fun.
Yeah, me and Raylene decided not to listen to the voice clips beforehand because we want like our... reactions to be pure and unadulterated.
We don't want to be fakers.
So I agree, really, and I'm really excited to just be like, what did everyone think? What do people have to say? What were the like?
Yeah,
things
I'm really
that
curious. The different opinions we're going to unveil today.
Yeah. An important note, this episode is all non-spoilery. So we are not going to go into any spoilers. If you haven't read the book, I still think you should listen to the episode because it'll be a fun one. We're just going to deep dive into this book and you don't have to worry about being spoiled if you've only just started it or haven't yet read it. But with that, all of that being said, let us jump in. Raylene! Why were you excited about this book? That's like my first question.
Okay, I was excited for this book. That's a good first question.
Thanks, man.
Because it sounded like a really interesting read in the way that it's about a guy writing a letter to his mom who can't read.
Yes.
Like that concept by itself was like, oh, interesting.
Yes,
I wonder why someone would do such a thing. So I think just like the novelty of the way it was written is really what drew me to it. And I knew that it was like an LGBT story, which I am always drawn to. And the cover is beautiful. I think those are the three things that made me want to read it. What about you?
Yeah, very similarly, I was very drawn into the concept of this letter. I actually didn't know that the mother was illiterate. I didn't know that she couldn't read. I just knew that it was a letter from a son to a mother telling like his opinions, his story, his life, his memories. I was like, that sounds really cool. And I actually really am not into epistolary things.
I haven't really decided whether or not I'm into it yet.
I usually tend to just be like, oh my god, why are you writing a letter? No one writes letters anymore. But for some reason that hold up had no say in this book. I was like a completely enthusiastic and excited. I was like, no, this just sounds like a cool concept. Like you, the cover. Yeah, it's really nice. And I love the font that they went with.
It's good.
But also, I was very, very curious about Ocean Vuong himself as an artist and as a writer. I kind of feel like, obviously, he didn't just come out of nowhere. He has also published a really successful poetry collection before this book came out. And has obviously been working. And he is also, like, he teaches literature and stuff. So he's obviously been in the scene for a long time. But just for me, it kind of felt like everyone was suddenly talking about Ocean Vuong. And I was like, first of all, what a cool name. Ocean. Wow.
Yeah, that's true. His name is poetry.
Yeah, it really is. But secondly, I was like, looking into the kind of writer that he seems to be, very poetic, very arty, I was like, oh, I'm into it. I want to check this out. Like, I don't know, for some reason, do you ever just have that where you're just like, for some reason, you're like, I think I might like this author. Like, it just kind of sticks with you.
Yeah, I definitely
you haven't
have that
even,
feeling a lot.
You haven't even read anything by them, but you're like, the person just seems cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so I thought to myself, like, okay, yeah, I think I'm really going to enjoy this. So sat down to reading it and started reading it. And honestly, for the first couple pages, was super into it. I was like, this is beautiful. This is, and I mean... I did a lot of, like, I tried to do a bit of research for our episode, really, and watched a bunch of interviews and did some reading and stuff. And I also like wanted to hear what everyone else was thinking, because sometimes I find like everyone is talking about an aspect of a book that I missed, and I'm like,
yeah, totally.
Like I go to
I looked up a couple of articles too, because I was like, let's just see what other people are thinking.
Yeah,
about this.
Exactly. And I like go to Goodreads reviews, and I'm like, wow, I didn't even really care about that part, but that's like the thing everyone's loving or whatever, right?
Right,
so I always like to check. So I was going through all the Goodreads reviews, and I actually do not think that there is such thing as a review of On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous that does not have the word beautiful in it.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that a lot.
And I agree. I actually do genuinely, wholeheartedly agree that the writing is beautiful. It's beautiful. Mm. And I have so many highlights in this book of lines that just, I was like, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. The writing was different from anything I've ever read.
Yeah, yeah. And no, it sunk you in. He has a very distinct style. I feel like if you were to give me an essay of his, I could, and you didn't tell me it was him, I'd be like, I think this is Ocean Vuong. Like, I feel like he has a style, he has a voice, and it's so deeply poetic. And so I was like really into it. I was like, wow, this is beautiful. This is really cool. I like the concept. And I loved learning about his family history. Like we talked about this on the last episode with Olivia, that like learning about family histories are, it's just really interesting to like hear that generational thing. And I don't read books where that happens that often. And I feel like I need to read more of them, because whenever I read it, I'm like, wow, what a great thing.
Right. Totally. Cause I love how, especially in this book, you've got the three generations.
Yes.
So you can kind of see how the grandmother is like affects the her daughter, and how she affects the main character.
Absolutely.
And, oh, it's so interesting to see how they're all intertwined.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it feels like such a tight family. It's so interesting because like the whole book is preoccupied with what is the American dream? What is it to be American? He doesn't feel American, but then he sometimes does. And maybe his family isn't American, but they are, et cetera, et cetera. And he worries, like, are they, like the character worries, are they a family? And I'm like, this is one of the coolest families I've ever seen. Like these people love each other and take care of each other in like weird ways and sometimes very dysfunctional ways, but like they're a family, you know? So anyway, I was loving reading about that, but after about, I want to say like 40 pages, maybe 50 pages, I started to really want a plot.
Yes.
This was,
I know, I've seen a lot of people on Goodreads reading this and they're like, there's no plot. Okay, I'm waiting for the plot to happen. So I knew that that was going to be a thing, and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this.
Yeah. Just, I got to like I said, about 50 pages, and I was like, okay, the beautiful writing is absolutely beautiful, but it is no longer enough to sustain me without also having a plot that is powering me forward. And so for the rest of the book, I just found myself feeling distanced. I didn't feel super immersed because I was like, okay, yeah, this is pretty, and I like learning about the characters, and maybe pretty is a bit diminutive. Like, it wasn't just pretty. It was some of the lines really cut you.
It was
you.
Poignant and poignant. Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I missed a plot. I just felt like it was a bit anchorless, maybe.
Yeah, it was definitely, it floated around in lots of different directions. There was lots of, you know, metaphors about animals comparing them to humans, and, you know, kind of flashbacks to Vietnam and things that were just like little glimpses that seemed out of place almost, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things kind of makes sense. But while reading it, I was just like, where is this going? What does this all mean? And especially because every single review I've seen for this book has been a glowing review.
Yeah.
Every review is 4 or 5 stars.
Yeah.
So I went into it with these really, really high expectations, which could be why I felt disconnected to it, because I was expecting something else from it. But I think maybe people are just really connecting to the underlying story and the beautiful writing, and that's able to bring it together for some people, but it didn't really bring it together for me. It felt like those things were too far apart.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, I guess, because I just shared like how my reading experience was. Is that similar to how it was for you, or did you have any other feelings at different parts of the book, sort of? Like, You hit 150 and it all turned around.
I wouldn't say it ever really turned around. I definitely, you know, I was hit emotionally later in the book, which we can talk about in the spoilery section.
Sure, yeah.
But there is some stuff that happens later in the book that made me just go like, oh man.
Yeah.
So like I definitely felt for the characters and felt the impact of what was happening.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it made me enjoy the book more in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, while reading it, I discovered that this is the type of book that I wouldn't normally read.
Yeah, yeah.
If we hadn't been reading it for book club and I hadn't spent like $30 on it, I maybe wouldn't have finished it.
And you know what? I agree with that. And the whole time I was thinking, like, I actually was given his poetry collection a few years ago. And I have it as this, like, ARC bind-up. Like, it's not even, like, a finished book. It just was, like, printed on a printer.
I love that.
And my friend Sana gave it to me, and she was just like, oh, I actually think you'd really like this. And I was like, oh, cool. And I had never heard of it. I had never heard of the author.
Mm-hmm.
And because of, like, just whatever circumstance, I just ended up not picking it up.
Never read it, yeah.
After reading this book, I am very excited to read his poetry collection. Because to me, the writing and the poignant lines, they all did feel like poetry, but I am not the kind of person who likes a 284-page poem. Do you know what I mean?
That was exactly what I was thinking. I was like, he's obviously a very, very gifted writer, and I think that it shines more as poetry.
Yeah.
I haven't read any of his poems, but I could just tell while reading this book, I'm like, he would write amazing poems.
Yeah.
And I can understand he's won an award, I think, for his poetry.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Or at least
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I can totally understand that, and, you know, he's getting lots of acclaim for this book, but it didn't really work for me. I can't imagine I would want to read more novels by him unless they're different. Oh.
Yeah, I'm very interested to, like, look up, not look up, but, like, when he comes out with a new book. I honestly do think I would give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this reminding me of? Gosh darn it. Oh, I know who it is. It's reminding me of Aaron Morgenstern. My relationship with Aaron Morgenstern. So a couple of years ago, we all read The Night Circus. Let's admit it, we all read it. And I loved that book. I really enjoyed it. I think I gave it 4 stars. And the reason that I didn't give it 5 stars, and the reason that it's not one of my favorite books, like, I would never say that The Night Circus is one of my favorite books, but I did really like it, is because the atmosphere was incredible. The scenery was amazing. The general ambiance of The Night Circus is so cool. Unlike anything I've read from another author. But it didn't have a plot.
Yeah, barely.
It didn't really have a plot that, to me, really, like, pulled me forward, and the characters felt very distanced from me. Like, I didn't feel like I got to know them. Like, I literally can't say what their names were. Like, I don't remember.
Yeah, no, that one is gone from my memory also.
But I remember how mystical it was. And so when I finished The Night Circus, I remember thinking, wow, that was really special. That was really cool. I can't wait to see this author's next book, because I'm like, all of the elements I liked from this book, I would like in another book, but also having that plot that, for me, drives me forward, you know?
I totally agree.
That reminds me, I wanted to read you this review I read of On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous, written by Roxane Gay.
Oh, I saw that she wrote a review for it and I didn't read it.
Okay, cool, perfect. Hold on, I thought I had it open, but I did not.
Oh, good.
So Roxane Gay, obviously author of Bad Feminist and Hunger and other things, just a generally cool writer at large. I was so surprised that she had posted her review on Goodreads. Like, she literally not only posted her review, like, she star rated it.
Oh, I know. I saw that she gave it 3 stars, and I was like, that's unusual. Normally, she gives high ratings to things that she reviews generally.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen many negative or semi-negative reviews.
I just thought
that
was so, like, bold. I don't know.
Right, like, writers rating things
low-ish
seems weird and wrong.
It totally does. But I really agree with her review. Like, I think that she very succinctly put towards what I was thinking. So she says,
okay, cool.
First of all, yeah, like you said, she gave it 3 stars. But then she writes, Ocean is a brilliant writer and I'm a fan of his work. I even published him once in Pank. I don't know what that is, but I'm assuming it's like a magazine she has.
Yeah.
It has been thrilling to watch him soar. The prose in this novel is sublime. sublime. The way he writes is just exquisite. He writes the body so well. He writes about the complicated relationship between a mother and son with real tenderness, with compelling honesty. He writes sex better than almost anyone out there. There are so many lines that gutted me or exhilarated me or stunned me. I wanted to sit with each line and just feel it as deeply as I could. The intimacy of the novel as a letter between a son and a mother was poignant. That said, I just didn't fall in love with this book. The prose was perhaps too beautiful, too resonant, without enough story behind it. That is a personal preference, the desire for story. As I got deeper into the novel, I kept wanting a clearer sense of where the story was going. I wanted to feel like there was more substance to hold all that style. I do still recommend this novel because I've never read anything like it. That's her review.
That is perfect.
Right? It's perfect. Yeah. It's literally, when I read it, I was like, there it is. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I almost feel like if this book had been like double the length and had had more plot,
yeah,
it could have been really strong.
Yeah.
Because it's just like 200 and whatever pages of kind of like, ooh, beautiful writing. It just kind of, it feels just like cotton candy. You
it
know?
Does like, feel like it, cotton candy. It felt like clouds. Yeah. It felt like...
Exactly. That's how I would describe
very
it.
Very ethereal. Let me see. I have notes, really.
Oh, good. I took some notes, too, but it's not a lot.
Okay, so I kind of had two questions for you, I guess, that are okay. Non-spoilery. Yeah, so my first question was, what do you think makes a classic? Like, what do you think can take a book that was published in 2019 or 2018, like a new book, what can take that book and make it into a classic? I know that this is such a weird question, mm-hmm. but for some reason it was something I was thinking about while I was reading this book, because reading the book and watching interviews with Ocean, I was very much like, wow, okay, this person is so cool. They are clearly such a, well, like, I don't even know how to say it, just like really accomplished writer, like really beautiful, very much understands what makes a good sentence and mm-hmm. what makes a good paragraph. And I was reading these lines and I was like, wow, this is beautiful. And in the book, he talks about writing a lot, right? Because yeah, like, he's true. Very self-aware that it is epistolary. Like, unlike maybe Perks of Being a Wallflower, where, yeah, they're letters, but I often in the book, while I'm reading Perks, forget that I'm reading letters because he's just telling a story.
Exactly. It's written more like, this is what happened. Yeah. And then you disappear into the story.
Right.
Itself.
Whereas here, he keeps saying, like, I'm writing to you. I'm writing mm-hmm. to your his mom. And this is what I think. And I write because of this. And, like, it comes up a lot. And he also talks about authors that have affected him and mm-hmm. et cetera. So I was like, okay, on paper, I feel like he has all the elements that I think could create a new classic book or a new author that's like a classic, like a
yeah,
someone who we all talk about in 100 years. But when reading it, I was like, there's something missing, and I actually think that it needs a plot.
Yeah, I believe that, because I think maybe a couple of different things go into like what makes a classic. I'm just trying to think of like what books have come out in the past, say, 20 years yeah. that already would be considered classics. Mm-hmm. And some, like The Handmaid's Tale is one that's yeah. like a modern classic.
Yeah.
And like even Harry Potter. And yeah, Harry Potter. I mean, I guess things that could make that into a classic is just how connected people feel to it. Mm-hmm, so I mm-hmm. think how much like truth it speaks about the human existence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like that is something that goes into making a classic. Doing something different.
Yeah,
doing something different totally. That has never been done before.
Totally, that's true.
I think those are both things that really go into it. So this does have the potential, but I agree that it might need a plot. Although there are definitely books that have less plot. Like Lolita, for example, is pretty much all beautiful writing.
That's very interesting. What an interesting thing to compare it to.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking while reading it, because I also didn't enjoy Lolita.
Oh,
and it was because
okay.
of the way it was written.
That's so
funny. It had nothing to do with the contents of the book. It was just the way it was written did not work for me. Because I found with this book, too, sometimes the writing would get in the way of me even understanding what was happening.
Sure, yeah.
Or
yeah.
of what he was describing, because yeah. he would just go so off track.
Yeah.
And I had that same experience with Lolita. So I was thinking about that a lot while I was reading
that's
this book.
So interesting, because like, I definitely agree with you that there's so many similarities there, but I actually love Lolita.
Yeah, which is fair. They're completely different books, yeah. but yeah, they're...
No, but I know what you mean, though. And so now I'm trying to think of, like, what is it in Lolita that feels different from this book? And you're right. You are right that the writing is, like, very intense in Lolita, but I also do think it has more of a plot.
And, oh, definitely.
Like, you have this big story of this character who... Obviously, I'm not even trying to tell the plot. I'm just saying, like, a character who is sharing where they've come to today and mm-hmm. the most impactful moment of their lives. And one of the things in this book is that it's completely told in, like, vignettes, right?
Yeah, it's very much so. There's even, if you flip through the book, you can see, like, there's just, like, little paragraphs that just kind of pop in that are totally, yeah. you know, different from what the story he's telling and stuff, which I wasn't really expecting that. There's a lot of breaks in each page.
And one of the interviews I watched, I forget which one, he said that he was looking to write something that would allow for so many vignettes. And he asked himself, what is a form that allows for the essayistic detour? Like, he wanted to be able to take as many detours as he wanted. And he was like, in a letter, you totally do that, right? You, like, start...
That's true.
You start writing a letter, and then you're like, and another thing! Oh, and another thing! And another thing! And, like...
That's true. It's kind of stream of consciousness a little bit, almost.
Yeah, exactly. And so, he was very much, like... He obviously chose this very purposefully. I think one thing that you said is really interesting, like... In order to be a classic, you have to write something that is different. And mm-hmm. I think that is... It's hard to put into words what I'm trying to say here. But, like, basically, I do think he's accomplished that in that he's put to the page and very vividly created these beautiful characters that are not what we typically think of when we think of classic books. And that is something he is preoccupied definitely. With in the book also, right? Mm-hmm. He talks about how, I forget, honestly, I wish I'd, it's one of those things where, like, when you're reading the book, moments stick out to you, but you don't then think to write down the page number for later reference.
No, totally.
I did for a couple, but not for this one. But he talks about how, like, he reads these writers that he really loves and that, like I remember him mentioning Shakespeare and others, but he says these people who could never have even imagined a face like mine reading their words.
Right?
Like, not someone who's Vietnamese or half Vietnamese or whatever, can't imagine, there isn't a place for them, but not only to enjoy it or read it or be affected by it, but be in it, right? Like, there mm-hmm. aren't, like, I can't name a classic book where a Vietnamese character is a main character.
No, totally, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely, and, that's 100%
true. It's not even just Vietnamese, it's just so many minority groups mm-hmm. that just aren't represented in classic literature, which is obviously the massive problem with even thinking about what makes a classic and what is canon, because for so long it's just been this one thing.
Exactly, I have to think of what 50 years from now will be considered, you know, an amazing book that will be a classic. It's going to be completely different from what we consider classics to be right now.
Yeah, totally. The other thing I was really thinking about a lot was autofiction. Have you heard of this term? So I stumbled upon it, I guess, last year because I read and loved Motherhood by Sheila Hedy.
Right.
Have you read that one? You haven't, right?
No. I started reading it and was like, this isn't for me.
Yeah, fair enough. To be fair, that book also does not have a plot. But yeah, so in that book, there's a main character. She's 39. She is trying to decide whether or not she wants to have a baby. She has never wanted a baby before, but she understands that, like, after 40, conceiving is so much harder. Mm-hmm. And, so that's the whole book. It's just this character trying to imagine, should I have a baby? Should I not? She has conversations with her friends. She thinks about what kind of a mother she would be and what kind of a mother she had and all this sort of stuff. And I found it, I really enjoyed it, but the whole time I was reading it, and, like, this is a thing that happens in other books, but not as, it had never happened as much as in this book, where I was reading it and I was thinking, is this just the author's real life? Like,
oh yeah, that was something I was thinking about during this book as
well. I was like, how much is fake and how much is fiction, how much is fiction and how much is real, etc., right? And I was like, well, this is, like, feels like the biggest blur I've ever felt. Because most of the time, like, you're reading a book and you're like, oh, okay, I can feel some of the author in this or whatever, whenever you ask yourself that question. But in this book, I was literally like, I was just imagining the author as the main character.
Well, yeah, because the main character basically was born in Vietnam and then they moved over, like, really early in his life.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's the same thing that happened to Ocean Vuong, right? Like, he was born over there and he spent most of his life over here. And so I'm imagining that his upbringing was similar, maybe without some of the dysfunctional aspects, but maybe not. Maybe that was part of his life.
I know that.
Who knows?
I know that his mom, like, is illiterate. She can't read.
Oh, interesting.
And, like, so I'm reading this book, and I'm like, this doesn't feel like it's fiction.
Right. While reading it, I was kind of thinking I would have preferred if he just wrote a memoir.
Like, interesting.
I think I would have preferred to just hear his actual story, because I feel like this one probably was so close to it.
Yeah.
And also he's actually gay too, right?
Yes,
and
yeah.
So, you know, the main character in the book goes through that whole journey. And I just feel like it would have been nicer to know what happened to him, but maybe he doesn't want to reveal the aspects of his life like that. And maybe that's why he decided to write a novel, which is fair.
Yeah. But. And like the autofiction term is basically that. It's kind of like autobiography and fiction together. Autofiction.
Yeah.
And so it's like all of the, and it's kind of like a newer thing. I mean, it's not new, but like it's become a really big deal in writing right now, where a lot of authors are choosing to write these characters who are so intertwined with them that you don't know where the line is. I remember, like, I was doing a bit of research before this about into autofiction, just to like refresh my memory on what I'd learned last year. And this one person was talking about how one of the early examples of this was like literally in the 1700s, but the author was like, can you have a character named the same as you? Like, what happens if Raylene, you were to write a book about a character named Raylene, and like, would that instantly make me think that it was true or not?
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's playing with that blurring of that line that I just think is so cool.
Speaking of that, this is going off the track a little bit, but the show Hannah Montana, Miley's name is Miley in that show.
Right! That's confusing, right?
So that's another thing. It's like, wait, what? And same with, like, That's So Raven. It's like, but her name is Raven.
Yeah, that kind of thing is very confusing.
You always gotta wonder, like, how much of this is just their real life? I'm so confused.
Especially when you're 12!
Yeah. It's a confusing enough time as it is. But actually, speaking of autofiction, when we were doing NaNoWriMo last month, I was writing a short story collection. And a lot of the stories that I was writing were inspired by memories from my childhood.
Yeah.
And so it was I was kind of writing autofiction.
Yeah, you totally were. Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what I connect to the most. And it's like, I don't want to say exactly, you know, what happened to me, because I don't want to do that. I don't want to write a memoir. But it's like, I can fictionalize my experiences, and it feels natural and easy to do it, and that's kind of okay, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's nice. Really cool. So did you have any, like, points or questions, or shall we dive into listening to voice clips?
We may as well just dive right in.
All right. Okay, so this is a quote from Jacob, and Jacob said that they decided to submit one of their favorite quotes from the beginning of the book. They also said, this is also Brooke, because I... accidentally messaged him and called him Brooke.
Amazing.
All right, so this is cool. Let's hear their favorite quote.
I think my favorite quote comes from page 10 in the beginning part of the book. It goes, I am 28 years old, 5'4" tall, 112 pounds. I am handsome at exactly 3 angles and deadly from everywhere else. I am writing you from inside a body that used to be yours, which is to say, I am writing as a son. That quote is absolutely, I can't. It's, I love it.
That was so cute. I love that. I'm glad someone submitted a quote. So then people listening can kind of get a glimpse of what the writing sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think, that quotation also perfectly encapsulates why I was so in love with the beginning of the book.
Totally. I love the introduction.
Like, why it was just, like, literally those first, like, I don't know, 40 pages, I was like, wow, yeah, this is really beautiful. This is really, really cool. I can't wait to learn more about this character.
Yeah, it worked really well as an opening to a book, and less so as a middle and end of a book.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So this next clip comes in from Sophie.
Okay, so here's what I thought about On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. I think Ocean Vuong is a really, you can tell he's a really sophisticated writer and he's got a way with words. But at times I felt that the sort of beauty and aesthetics of the writing overtook the story a little bit. And it was hard to sort of fight through the prose to find the actual meaning of the passage.
Well, Sophie's just saying exactly what we're thinking.
Yeah, I'm so glad someone agreed. I was so worried that everyone was going to be raving about the book during this discussion. Like, I was scared that you were going to be like, it's a 5-star. I loved everything about it. And then every single voice clip was going to be the same thing. So I'm glad to see that there are other people out there who kind of agree with what we're saying.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the way that Sophie put it was really good in that it was a bit like, you wanted to love it because the writing was so good, but you kind of were like she said, like you're fighting through the writing.
Yes, and I've said before that I don't necessarily read a book because of beautiful writing, and for that to be the only draw that this book had to me, like, well, after reading it, it was like, oh, oh no.
All right, let's do the next one. This is from Helena.
Hi, guys. First of all, thank you for making me read this book because it's one of my favorites now. I loved it and I think I'm gonna reread it like immediately. But I don't like the idea that it's a work of fiction. When I was reading it, I read it as if the story was Ocean Vuong's life, and then I read that it was fiction and I don't like that. I it doesn't feel like fiction, and I don't know. What do you guys think?
That's so interesting. I love that so many of the things that we talked about are coming up in these voice messages. Like, yeah, we're not seriously crazy here. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, we just talked about that. Like, I didn't feel like this was fully fiction. And it is this auto-fiction genre where you're like, where is the lines crossing over? And honestly, I feel like that is a huge compliment to Ocean. This didn't feel like fiction. This felt true.
It felt real. Yeah, I like the idea that she said she was reading it and then realized it was fiction.
Yes,
and it was like, ah. Like, it'd be interesting going into this not realizing it was fiction. I wonder if doing that with any book would be really interesting. Just be like, can you guess if it's fiction or not?
Yeah,
and if this one feels like it's not, that is definitely a compliment.
This reminds me of another quote I wrote down from one of the interviews that I saw Ocean talking about. He said, I wanted to start with truth and end with art. So he was deep. Everything this guy says is so cool, but
yeah, no, that's really nice.
He was saying that, like, because somebody asked, this was when he was on Seth Meyers of all places, but he was like, Seth Meyers was like, how much of this is true, basically? Because he was born in Vietnam and his mother can't read. Like, it just seems like so much of it is true. And Ocean gave this answer. He's like, I wanted it to start with truth, but I wanted to end with art. And I thought that was, like, honestly a very perfect summary of this book, in that it does deeply feel true. It does deeply feel, like, honest and real. And the characters feel real. And the struggle that they go through feels real. But then it also does end up becoming a bit more ethereal than that, and a bit art.
It's very art.
You can all quote me on that. It's a bit art, isn't it? This actually, though, reminds me of one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, I sort of went into it a bit, but like, one of the best parts of this book for me is just hearing from a voice we don't usually hear from, and having that voice be heightened and gorgeous in the way that it hasn't been allowed to, like, prosper before, you know? And I had so many moments in this book where I was like, I felt the power of representation.
Oh, totally. That was the thing I loved most about the book.
Yeah.
Was just like, yes, the story deserves to be heard.
Yeah, how have we not talked about that yet?
Yeah, I don't know.
Absolutely. So I, I as a half white, half brown person, am in a very interesting place where I am almost always white passing, so people think I'm white, and I'm like, cool, great, whatever, I don't care. whatever you want, my friend, whatever you want. But because of that, I feel sometimes very, like, careful and cautious when I'm talking about race, because obviously there are people who are way more marginalized than me. But Regardless, let's all talk about it because it's a great conversation to have. And I am the daughter of an immigrant mom. And Senora is the coolest lady.
She really is.
She's sick. But she came to Canada when she was 27 or 28 years old. She was born and raised in Honduras and met my dad when he was down there. He was working for the United Nations. He was a pilot. Everyone can just know my life. And yeah, they met, they got married, they came to Canada, and then 1 or 2 years later, they had me. And that's where the story really starts.
This is the point I'm trying to get at.
No. The point I'm trying to get at, though, is that I was born very soon after my mom came to Canada. She, when I was growing up, my first language was Spanish because my mom couldn't speak English, right? And my dad was at work all day, so I was spending all day with my mom, who was a stay-at-home mom, and I was speaking Spanish. So my world for the first 5 years before I went to kindergarten was Spanish. And I apparently, my parents took me to a doctor once because I wasn't speaking English. And I was also, I was mixing words a lot. So I would like get confused and I would like be speaking English and then put in a Spanish word or like vice versa.
Yeah.
Apparently it's very normal because it's like you're learning two languages at once. So it can be very confusing for.
Yeah, my mom had that with French too. They call it Franglais.
Spanglish. And it's like this kind of thing where it can be really confusing, especially for a young, young kid. But regardless, I say all this because I have so many memories, even to this day, honestly, so many memories of being a kid at the grocery store, at the bank, at the doctor's office, and speaking for my mom. So I would be literally, I remember being like 5 years old or 6 years old and being at a grocery store and me and my mom like buying groceries and having a great time. And then we put them all on the cash register and she gives me the money. And she would give me the money and I would be the person who deals with the cashier. I'm the person who like goes to the bank with my mom and translates everything or like my mom would always take one of us to a doctor's appointment because she needed to make, obviously we needed to make sure we knew everything the doctor had said. And when my mom was like, no, I'm having this kind of pain or whatever, you know, whatever doctor thing was going on. She'd be like, we need to make sure that the doctor gets it. So I would be there or my brother would be there to translate it. And that was like, I wrote a poem about that once, many years ago. And so when I was reading about it in this book, I was just like, that is me.
That's so cute and relatable.
Yeah, but I was like, there's so many, I call them translator kids in my mind. I've always called us translator kids. But there are, there's so many of these little translator kids all over who are like raised by immigrants, but were raised in the new country and therefore speak the language better.
Yeah, like going to school and learning English and stuff.
It's super weird because like my mom taught me how to read, but she didn't know how to read English back then. So I like, how did that happen? I literally don't get it. Like these immigrant moms are the coolest. Like I'm like so awed by them. But yeah, that was totally something in the book that I was like, I love reading about this because there was so much responsibility on Little Dog's shoulders. Do you remember when like Little Dog and it was one of the saddest moments for me. The mom really wanted to cook a Vietnamese dish.
Oh yeah, I was just thinking about that part.
Yeah, and she goes to the grocery store and she says, hi, like I need to buy this kind of meat, but she can't say it in English. And so they're trying to translate and the people at the meat counter are laughing at them. And the little kid doesn't know exactly what she wants, so he can't translate it. And when he goes home that night, he says to himself, like, I am never going to fail at translating again. Like, I am always going to know.
He wants to look out for his mom and his grandma and he doesn't want them to have to go through that again.
Devastating. Jeez.
Yeah, it really puts a lot on the little kid's shoulders.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
Ugh. All right, let's do another voice clip. So this one is from Brittany.
Hello, my name is Brittany, and here is my quickie review thoughts on On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong. This is a book I don't know if I could feel justify giving a rating to because there's something so wholly emotional. That being said, when I picked it up, it reminded me a lot of Canadian author, Vietnamese Canadian author Kim Thuy, who does little novellas that are sort of in a vignette form, very similar to Unearthed Were Briefly Gorgeous. I do enjoy stories of immigrants or first generation people of color and telling their experiences of growing up in a place that is so different from where their parents grew up, and how that dynamic and that relationship is so different between the two. And like I said, if you did enjoy this book and you guys are looking for like a Canadian read, I really recommend you guys check out Kim Twee's book. They're in a more poetic form, so I think that'd be more Ariel's cup of tea. But yeah, thanks for putting this together. I really appreciate the opportunity to do a book discussion with you guys, and I can't wait for the episode. Bye.
That was really sweet. I just love that everyone's doing these, you know. It's really nice. They took the time out of their day, really.
That is awesome to get a recommendation for a new author.
I actually love that.
For people who like this. Yeah. I also think it was interesting how Brittany said this book was emotionally driven. We've talked about how it's not very plot driven because there is barely any plot.
Yeah.
So I guess it just depends on what kind of story you enjoy, because obviously there is an audience for this book.
Yeah. Oh.
We may not have loved it, but a lot of people do.
Yeah. And so, I wouldn't say I like disliked it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I just, to me, it felt very neutral. I felt like I was kind of reading a book that wasn't meant for me, which is weird.
No, exactly.
Which is weird because I I literally just said to you that whole thing about my mom and stuff. I'm like, there were moments that felt very close to my heart, and and there were lines that I wouldn't tattoo them on me because I don't think I'd ever tattoo a quote, but like that's another point. there are quotes that I would like hang on the wall, you know, like beautiful, beautiful lines. But at the same time, yeah, it didn't feel like it was for me.
Yeah, I'm glad that other people have connected to it, though.
Like,
I'm glad that, you know, there is a platform for it.
Yeah. Okay, so this next voice clip comes from Bianca.
Hey, Raylene and Ariel. This is Bianca. My question is centered on Vietnamese used in the book. I just got done reading part one, and in the beginning, there are, I think, like, three different parts where Vietnamese is used, and there's no like footnote that says like a translation of it. So I'm just curious, when you're reading a text and there's a phrase or a word in another language, do you kind of gloss over it and kind of forget about it? Do you kind of use context clues to try and figure out what that phrase or word would mean? Or do you go into Google Translate and, you know, do the work of figuring out what the text is trying to say? Just curious about how you guys handle that while reading, or when you're reading any text when you see another language that's other than English. All right, thanks, guys.
I always read it and I imagine what it says, but like,
yeah. Because I figure if they don't translate it within the text, it's almost like you're not supposed to know.
Yeah,
what it says.
Yeah. Like, you're not expected.
It's kind of like
to
in movies where there's no subtitles when people are speaking a different language. It's like,
exactly.
There's a reason that they did that.
Yeah, and there's,
and so I kind of just let the flow keep going.
Yeah, they definitely don't expect you to like put down the book, bring out Google Translator, type it in. Like, they don't expect you to do that. I think they, like you said, they want you to keep that flow alive. This next one comes from Leonie.
Hi. So I finished Unearthed Were Briefly Gorgeous just last week, and after I finished it, I was so stunned that I had to gather my thoughts before I could write a review or talk to anyone about it. But now when I think about it, I'm just so in love with the way the writer combines prose and verse, and just the whole format was so unique and very touching, and it was sometimes hard to read, but that just made it all the more special, I think. And all the themes he explores, like masculinity, language, family, sexuality, were so hard-hitting. And yeah, just thank you for making this the book club pick.
I think it's really interesting to think about how sometimes like that beautiful writing that made it a bit harder, she even said like it makes it a bit harder to read the book, she sees that as almost a positive, like a bonus.
Yeah,
like
that totally makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that that's the kind of stuff that happens in poetry that I love so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also...
Yeah, because it kind of makes you think, you know, you kind of have to think a little harder while you're reading it. It's not just like an easy journey, which also reflects what happens in the book and what's described in the book. Is that none of it is easy.
No.
And so that's kind of a cool way to reflect that within the writing.
I think that's a really cool point. Sarah says... I get more and more animated as I talk, but here.
Oh, right. I remember seeing that email. I was like, oh, okay.
Hey, my name is Sarah, and this is what I think about On Earth We Are Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong. I thought that overall the book was impeccably written, and I listened to it on audiobook. But if I had it physical, I would probably underline, like, almost the entire book. But sometimes I did feel that even though the writing was incredibly beautiful, that it did kind of distract from the overall book. And the book didn't really have necessarily a plot. Like, the point of the book was to document the experience of Little Dog. But sometimes, like, the prose would turn into a kind of, like, tangent. So I did get lost a few times. Yeah, those were my thoughts. Oh, sorry. Also, I completely loved the fact that it documented the Vietnamese family in America. I thought that that was a really interesting perspective that I had not heard before. Oh, and I'm sorry, I have to say one more thing. If we are continuing on the mindset that this book was written to his mother, would you personally document in graphic detail your sexual experiences to your mother? Because, like, I mean, maybe I would, like, tell my mother that I had sex, but I don't know if I would, like, continue on in such detail about what it felt like, what his... anyway, sorry, I'm getting carried away. But anyway, I just felt like the whole plot, the whole idea of him writing to his mother worked in a lot of ways. And sometimes I was like, is this realistic that he would write his mother this? Yeah, that was another thing that I really, really didn't know how I felt about.
Okay, she brings up a very good point, because I was thinking that that was one of the notes I made.
I thought that too.
one of the notes I made was, why wasn't this written as a diary?
Yeah. Oh,
He does make, like, he does say, the only reason I'm writing this is because I know you will never
read it. Yes, I literally, okay, really, I just pulled that line up. He says, and I quote on page 113, the very impossibility of your reading this is all that makes my telling it possible. So, yeah, exactly like you said, like, he is only writing it because he knows she can't read it. But there's also...
But at the same time.
I felt like even though that was the case, he still wanted her to read it. Don't you think?
Yeah. I think so. Because also her experience of discovering that he was gay when he tells her later in the book, like, she doesn't react super well. And that makes sense coming from where she comes from and her upbringing and all that. So it makes sense that he wouldn't want to tell her, but also at the same time feel like he needs to tell her, kind of just be like, you need to hear this, mom, kind of thing. But that also brings into the discussion the whole, why did he write a letter to his mom if he knows she won't read it? That was one of my questions of, like, what is the purpose of that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's so weird how often I've talked about this book on the podcast, because I feel like I don't talk about it that often in real life. But in Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed, obviously.
I was waiting for Fly on the Wall.
Very good, very good. No, in Tiny Beautiful Things, obviously, it's people writing, like, agony aunt letters, right? Dear Sugar, I have this problem.
Right.
And what I find really interesting about that format is that it kind of lets you talk about a vulnerable problem to someone who is completely away from the situation and kind of can't judge you. And, like, if they do, whatever, there's no consequence, right? And so I read that book and I thought it was so interesting. And I actually did a couple journal entries just like that. I wrote them Sugar, basically being like, I am vulnerable about this problem in my life. And I can't talk to anyone in my real life about it, but I want to feel like I'm not just talking to myself.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so I wrote these letters out, and they were really interesting to write. Like, it changed. It was definitely different from a journal entry.
I see. Yeah, that's
so.
I understand.
So maybe it was something like that, where it was kind of like writing. He doesn't want to write it to himself. He knows how he feels. He wants to write it to her to explain how he feels to her. But then hopefully she doesn't read it. But then I really did feel like he wanted her to read it. So that
I think that's part of it. Yeah. Well, because it puts the feeling behind it rather than it just being like, let me just write it in my journal.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's also kind of a like self-help or like therapeutic device that people use sometimes, where it's like, oh, if you're having a problem, sometimes it helps to write an angry letter.
Right.
And then, like, just never send it kind of thing.
Right.
So I guess that does make sense. It really puts the emotion into it, which is what makes it so emotionally driven as a book, I guess. So, yeah, no, that's fair. That makes sense then. I understand. Yeah, and actually that just made me think of like a good reason why it was written like that is because, as we know, the mother can't read and therefore can't write. And so it's like he wants her story to be heard, but he knows that she'll never be able
to
tell it.
Yeah. That's
so that's
super
kind
true.
Of a nice way for him to do
that. I think that's a really cool point. Well, our final voice clip comes from Anna. Anna says, "Hi, my name is Anna. I'm from Mexico, and I love the book."
Fantastic.
On Earth, we are briefly gorgeous. The most beautiful and poetic book I've read this year. Thanks, Books Unbound.
Oh my God, she loved it. I'm so happy. That's so good.
I like that as an ending clip.
I like that too.
That was like a stamp.
You know what? Just expressing your love for it is amazing. Thank you, Anna.
Oh, thanks, Anna. That was great. I love that. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in voice clips. I did quite genuinely feel fear that no one would send them in.
Right? I feel like we got a good array of different opinions and different voice clips, and just the right amount, I feel like.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we got a few different voices in
there. Thank you so much to everyone who read along with us. Once again, thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who supported us on Patreon. We only have one more episode coming out this year before we take a break for Christmas, and we come back in January. Me and Raylene are gonna have a big old planning session about our podcast, but I think that this episode really proved that the book club works awesomely, and
absolutely.
We should definitely do this. This type of episode again. Thank you so much to everyone, and we will talk to you guys next time. Bye!
Bye!